You're listening to the Inverse Podcast, where we explore how the scriptures can turn our world upside down,
or how it can be weaponized to uphold the status quo. I'm Drew Hart.
And I'm Jared McKenna, and this is Inverse.
Some episodes I get a little more excited about conversation partners than others, and this one in particular I'm really excited about because it's such a dear friend of mine. I know of Jared as well, and of the Inverse community, and so we're really grateful that her voice can be known at least through the circles, through Inverse, as well as others that may be listening. So I want to introduce you to Naya Abernathy. She is the founder and leader of The Dignity Effect, through which she focuses on adult social emotional learning grounded in dignity. As a writer, Naya is known for exploring wonder and awe from the intersection of space and spirituality through her publication of Earth and of Stars. Her excellent debut book, Welcome Wonder, is a transformative journey into self-discovery and personal growth, and it is available right now, this moment, at nayasabernathy.com. Within the Inverse community, Naya, again, she is deeply beloved and known for spreading joy. And I always want to let people know, just as a, I don't know if it's a warning or an invitation, but if you spend time with Naya just enough, be prepared that you will be participating in some full embodied karaoke. And yes, this can happen in person, but also she can get karaoke going on through the Zoom. And so be warned. But I'm just so grateful. Naya, welcome to Inverse Podcast.
Thank you. I am elated to be here with y'all.
And we're so excited to be doing this with you, Naya. You are such a blessing to the Inverse Collective, and the reality that who you are is now shareable with so many other people who aren't part of these circles or your circles is really exciting. For those who are just hearing about the book right now, can you give us a sneak peek? Tell us a little bit, sketch. What was dropped in your heart? How has this grown into this beautiful project? And could you give us a little sneak peek of what has been happening in you that you're now sharing with others?
If you read the introduction in the book, I started off with a quote by Carl Jung, and then the line, "Wonder saved me," and I really mean that. And then I reflect on the kind of like hopelessness and uselessness that I was feeling in 2020 and 2021 around all of the social justice movements and what it meant to be a part of that and affecting change that was meaningful while still watching and hearing so much violence and oppression and injustice. And my husband was, I was like languishing in bed or something. And he was like, "Hey, you space shows in a long time," just like kind of made this suggestion because he knows me so well. And it had been a very long time. And I started laying in bed at night with all the lights out, watching these shows that would, particularly How the Universe Works is one of my favorites, because it gives you the science along with the storytelling of film and illustration and different science communicators. And it stoked something in me that I really needed to continue to imagine a world beyond the moment we were in. And so that's kind of where it started. I will name another Inverse. Ken, Aaron Wang, and I started talking and planning about how I started writing. And then I was talking to Aaron. I said, "I don't think this writing is just for me. I feel like I'm not the only person who needs this. It doesn't feel like something that's supposed to live in my journal. It feels like it's supposed to be out." And so she and I talked, and she was so encouraging. And then I, several months later, started Of Earth and of Stars, which is my Substack publication. And From of Earth and of Stars is where this book grew out of. Marla Taviano, she's not formally a part of Inverse, but a lot of people Inverse know her.
Yep.
And I say this in the kindest way possible. She yelled at me a few times about how I could write this book. She's like, you already have it. You have the content. This is, you can do it. And so I really appreciate her, because specifically her encouragement made me say, yeah, I think you're right. I think I can. And so those were kind of the ticks on the timeline that get us to Welcome Wonder being in the world today.
Yeah, it is amazing. I was just honored to be able to be one of the endorsers for the book, because I know that people are going to love it. I don't know if people will know what they're getting into ahead of time. It's like you gotta actually open it up and enter into the journey of it before you can. It's an experience, right? And it is intended to be this kind of embodied experience and practice, right? And almost a habit forming kind of thing that you take people through, that I think actually does help people enter into wonder and awe, and to see both. I love the ways in which you turn us to the little and the transcendent and cosmic, right? And back and forth and everything in between. And it's really beautiful. So thank you for that gift that you've shared into the cosmos, but also the ways that I know that it will, others are going to appreciate it as well. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. That was the goal. So that means a lot that you would say those words. Thanks, Drew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, you know, we like to do is to, when we have our conversations, is to just ground our time with some scripture, right? And so have you picked a scripture that you can read for us that can kind of maybe set the tone for the rest of our conversation together?
Yes, I picked just two, and it's going to be in Genesis 2. I'm going to be reading from the Voice translation because I like it. And it's verses 7 and 8. And this is, just a note, this is one of the creation stories. Yeah. And, this is, let me see. Yeah. Okay. Verse 7, one day the eternal God scooped dirt out of the ground, sculpted it into the shape we call human, breathed the breath that gives life into the nostrils of the human, and the human became a living soul. The eternal God planted a garden in the east in Eden, a place of utter delight, and placed the human whom God had sculpted there.
Hmm. That is a beautiful translation. Thanks, Nai. Well, I'm looking forward to getting into this, particularly knowing the questions and the affirmations and the noticings. That is something of your rhythm in the book, and wanting to do the same here. So as a way of first asking a question that we might affirm your experience and then notice things in our own experience. See what I did there? You're welcome. Like, we would love to hear from you about the first time you remember encountering the scriptures. Do you have particular memories or a memory that stands out for you?
Yeah. So I grew up in church. I grew up in a variety of Black churches in the southeastern portion of the U.S. and really settled in a Pentecostal tradition and had a lot of formation there. But I specifically remember having a Precious Moments Bible, which I still have upstairs. And I remember, like, my grandmother had a Bible. There were some Bibles in the house that were, like, for adults. And so I felt like this was the text that was mine as a child. I did encounter the text from the pulpit and in, like, church programs and things like that. But having that Bible, and, you know, I specifically remember the pages with all the words and then the pictures of these, like, sweet kids was something that really stood out to me and helped me to understand at a pretty essential level that there was something in the text for me. So, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's interesting. I almost want to ask you, like, what kind of pictures were in the Bible? I'm just gonna keep, you got me.
Do you want to go down?
Sure.
I very specifically remember, so they would have, like, you remember the Precious Moments Bible. I'm an 80s baby, so, like,
yeah.
You know, none of the kids in this Bible look like me, but were like, they're really sweet, and they had, like, these big eyes and, like, sort of, like, melancholy faces. But I remember there are pictures of, like, maybe kids who had, like, gotten hurt, or, like, they had, like, a tattered, like, toy or blanket. And then there would be a scripture talking about, like, God's love for them, or how it looked to show up for someone in friendship and in relationships. And those are some of the things that I think really kind of impressed me at a very foundational, almost basic level, in the way that I kind of entered into what the book was even about, like what was the point. So those, I think those things were really marked me very young.
Yeah, really interesting. So I'm curious, so as you're encountering the Bible, you know, we're also 80s kids and stuff. And so, like, how are you encountering it? What is your experience with and around the Bible, and how it's, you know, being engaged and interpreted? Was it an oppressive thing? Was it a liberating thing? Was it something else? Yeah, what was your experience with the Bible?
It was both. I think it depends on, like, where we're landing in the formation process. I would, especially as you know, a kid and a teenager, it was easy for me to go to the Bible to find comfort. I think even just the way the preaching of the Bible in Pentecostal context, in this embodied way where you, in a passion where, because you know something, you know something in your knowing that is, it's in the text, but it's beyond the text. And so there was a hopefulness, there was a support, there was a buoying of the text within experience that I think seemed very evident to me. So it felt like something I could go to and find something I needed. I think as I got older into, like, later teens, it started becoming something else. I had a lot of questions. God bless my youth pastor, because I would show up Sunday mornings having, like, been with this book all week by myself, and I was like, I would, like, run into the church, and I distinctly remember his face, like, oh girl, can I get one Sunday off? I'm like, no, I have 7 questions, and you're the youth pastor, and I'm a youth, and I need to talk to you about them right now before service, because I've literally been thinking about this since, like, Tuesday afternoon, you know. And so as I started asking questions and getting really curious about the application of what we're reading, and some of the answers then kind of became constrictive, and I started to wonder how to move within the confines that were offered in response to my questions. And so what eventually happened was that, and I didn't really realize this until my early 20s, was that at some point what was, like, refreshing and liberative and, like, welcoming had really morphed. And as I was going to the Bible, I think we all do this, like, we bring where we are in the moment to the text, right? And so the text can be contextualized in how it was written, but we contextualize it in the moment that we show up as well. And so I was contextualizing it within my own very deep mental, emotional health challenges that I was going through at the time. And I started going to the Bible looking for evidence that I wasn't a complete lost cause. But because I was carrying that feeling of not being good enough, I could never find something that would ease that fully or take that away. And so it became that my experience approaching the text, it didn't matter what it said. It wasn't shifting how I was feeling about myself, about my relationship to God, about what was required of me and if I could or could not do it, and then what that would mean. All of those things was what I was bringing, and it complicated a lot of things as there were theologies forming, again, based on what happens when you have questions in a space that doesn't necessarily invite the honest curiosity that comes when you are a 16-year-old reading an ancient book and you are trying to figure out what it means now. So,
knowing you well, I'm fascinated that you put these two words together. You said, I was wondering how to move. And I was like, yep, both those check out, because they're still really important to you, right? Movement and embodied sense of what faith is and what, I mean, it comes through literally in every reflection in this beautiful gift that you've given to the world, to be able to check in with our bodies. And I can see the journey of integrating and affirming what was good in that experience, that embodied experience, hasn't left you, and it's been able to mature in such ways that it's become something that is affirming. And, you know, it's the dignity effect that comes through with everything that you do, right? But also the wondering. And I'm wondering, excuse the pun, if you would invite us into, clearly in this offering that you've just released to the world, there is a certain way you have developed in considering and contemplating these things, which doesn't sound like where you were at 16 years old. Would you invite us into how you now read the scriptures and what considerations around wonder and awe and gratitude and like that body affirming, checking in, listening that is integrated through all that you do? Would you invite us into that and the journey from where you were?
It's so interesting because I'll tell you something that I only realized literally a few weeks ago. And I was like winking at spirit. Like, I see what you did there. That's really cool. So while I think I've always been fascinated by the sky, the night sky in particular, it wasn't until a few years ago that I really started to focus on the word and the presence of wonder in a really intentional way. And when I was 17, I remember sitting in the back of a family friend's car. It was at night and we were driving and they were talking about something. They were talking about faith and God, and I'm listening to what they're saying, but I'm also looking up at the sky in the car, and there's stars in the sky. And I have this moment where whatever they're talking about and me like looking at the sky for like the millionth time, it fused into something that made me go, okay, the one who created the stars and the moon and everything that I see when I look up, who's also willing to be with us as a human, like, I want to rock with you, like, till the wheels fall off, right? And so, and a few weeks ago, I was like, oh, you drew me in with wonder, even in that moment, even when I didn't know that it was going to, like, So I think, I really do think the trajectory of where my wonder connects with Jesus started there very, very yeah. clearly. And it feels like such a graciousness and, yeah, and such a joy for that to happen. And after that moment, like I said, I grew up in church, but that was a moment where I was like, no, Jesus is mine, you know? And I started to really ferociously get into the scripture and really want to, what do you require of me? What do you want from me? You know, that was always kind of this question, because I always wanted to have the answer, the yes answer. Like, I always want to say yes. So what is it that I need to say yes to is kind of the question. And what was happening at the same time, which many 80s babies, there were, again, those mental health challenges that were coming up that I didn't know what it was. There was not we didn't know how to name those things. And I went to college and got further into my commitment to church and the text and being right in right relationship with the text and right relationship with God's commands. Notice I'm not saying certain things on purpose, but being in right relationship with the requirements that the church had, and that was happening alongside my mental and emotional health getting dire. I very distinctly remember two points where in the moment the shift felt incremental, but again, the trajectory ended up changing pretty massively. There was one moment where I very much recognized, these were both after college at this point, I very much recognized that I was harboring a deep, deep, deep self-hatred. And I had a moment where I thought, I don't actually think this is what God's dream is for my life. From all the things, all the stuff that I picked up, all the toxicity and the bad theology and all that stuff, in that moment, I had enough clarity to say, I don't think this is it. I think I'm missing something, because this can't be what the whole goal of Jesus's presence in the earth and then Spirit's presence in us. This can't be it. And then another moment that happened probably a couple years later, you've ever had this happen? This has happened to me more times than I care to share. I have lots of stories like this where God kind of lifts their left eyebrow at you and kind of gets a little saucy. This is one of those moments. And God was like, I'm not who you think I am. And I'm like, what? And basically, God was communicating that I kept varnishing the image, this image I had of God over the experience I'd had of people. And God was like, that's not me. I was like, okay, well, it's good to know. I don't know what to do with that. But those two points set me in a direction that made me curious again. Okay, well, if self-hatred is not the dream, what is the dream? Okay, if this is not, if you're not who I think you are, then who are you? And again, incremental, but that kind of set me on the trajectory to a lot of healing, a lot of questions, gathering up language like dignity, like authenticity, like vulnerability, like wholeness, like gathering language around what I was desiring and how God was showing up in. Where is my yes? And God is like, here. Your yes is in the authenticity. Your yes is in the vulnerability. Your yes is in wholeness. It was in the movement in those spaces and in those ways and allowing the answers to my questions to sometimes be more questions. It was all of that. And so much relationship and so much experience, so much cracking open, tears, taking off, putting on, therapy, lots of laughing, you know, all of the things.
And karaoke.
And a lot of karaoke, clearly.
That's right.
I was going to say there's several entries in the book that talk about play and joy.
Yeah.
And that's such a key part for anybody, but for me in particular, because if you can't tell from my story, like I have a very serious demeanor as far as like the way that demeanor is not the right word. I'm very serious minded. And so if I can get really deep, really fast and get, you know, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
No.
But I do think creators, like in all of that, do not forget the joy.
Yeah.
Don't forget the play.
Yeah.
Don't forget the delight. Delight was a word that I was introduced to in relationship to who God is and how God relates to us when I was like in my mid-20s. I grew up in church and never really had anyone draw me into this reality of like God delighting in us and God delighting in me. A concept that which y'all already know this and we'll get into it in a little bit, that I love, that if somebody says, can you come preach? I say, yeah, I preach about one thing, is Imago Dei. I grew up in church in different expressions of church and have hardly ever heard anybody, not a Bible study, not a sermon series, on Imago Dei. And it's so foundational. And if we start at a place of God delighting in us, and if we start at a place of our Imago Dei being intact and full and whole and real at all times, again, that trajectory and where it takes you as you go throughout the text, as you experience life with God and with the whole of creation, it changes how you then show up and how you contextualize the moments that you are in relationship and in conversation with the text when you start with wonder and delight.
Oh man.
So good. You know, one of the things I was noticing as you were talking, and it even reminded me of even conversations we've had, but you use the language of gathering up, like a vocabulary language. And I guess what struck me about how beautiful that is, especially right now, because there's a lot of folks who are struggling with faith. You hear a lot about deconstructing, but you've never just been satisfied with just deconstructing. You're constructing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're always opening up into new worlds and new possibilities. And I remember a conversation we're having, and you were like, Drew, talk to me about imagination, right? Because I think it's something, and you know, but it just reminded me of this whole, it's a pattern, right? That you were actively constructing new ways of knowing, experiencing, encountering God, embodying what it means to be Naya in this world, right? And I really appreciate the boldness, because in some ways it's scary to step forward into something new, right? And it takes even courage to build new things and to see and to dream, right? And to wonder when there's so much heaviness also attached to one's lived experience, right? So anyway, I just wanted to name that. But now in light of that, right? So you take us on this journey of how you got to this place of Imago Dei, delight, joy, wonder. So let's bring in that lens back to Genesis, right? Can you walk us through this Genesis text? Let's have a conversation around it. And you can start us off just helping us. You know, I'm just curious how when someone has a hermeneutic, a lens of wonder, You know, what might we encounter as we return to Genesis 2?
Yeah. Well, first I have to say, Drew, that the imagination piece came from Who Will Be a Witness, your second book. Because you talk about it and I'm like, oh, like when I find something delicious, I can be kind of gluttonous about it. I'm like, let's imagination. And I'm like, give me more. Just pass me plates of what do you mean? Who else is talking about this? Let's, you know, on this thing, because it's life-giving and it's not something that, again, is talked about in an institutionalized church context very much. And the invitation into practicing it, I think, is really key. Not just do you have it or do you not? We all have it. What's informing it? What comes out of it? And it's so necessary to practicing the world that we desire to live in, pass on to the next generations, et cetera. So we could probably hang out there for a while, but I won't. Y'all already know me, so I'm like ready to dive in the deep end. But there's been people who don't know you, so I want to.
You're gonna walk us slowly in, right? Get our foot in first, and if you want to jump right in the deep, we'll jump in with you. You know,
we're
following you wherever you go.
Yeah.
Your hand, but we're probably running into the ocean screaming and giggling. That's probably what it's gonna feel like. Okay,
it's appropriate play for the moment.
Okay, so once we get to verse 7 in Genesis 2, there's a lot of things that have been going on, right? There's a lot of things that have been created and made, and one of the things that I want to name is that this is not the text that talks about Imago Dei explicitly. And that text, it basically where God says, I have this idea. Let's see what happens with this creation. What do you think about that? And God consults with God's self. And before this happens in the voice translation, I'm trying to see where the in the voice translation, God does all of this creating, and then it says, and God pauses. And I read that pause and I animate God in my imagination. Just like when we pause and when we have a good idea, we're like something like clicks, so we have an aha moment. I feel like the storyteller of this creation story was like, and God pauses. And when we think about the story as first an oral or an passed on in an oral tradition, that would make sense that there would be dramatic like additions to this. And so as we're reading the text, I want to just underline some of those things. Because as we go into the seventh verse, the intentionality and the excitement of God, the delight is already there. It's there in God's pausing and saying, what do you think about this idea? And this new creation that we're going to make is going to be like us. And I want to say that one of the first people that I heard to challenge this idea around domination and ruling over in a very succinct way and give an alternative was Dr. Gigi Kenyezi, who's also part of the inverse space. And she said, you know, that the text that says, and God, you know, they're going to have dominion and rule over is better understood as they're going to have agency. And my question has always been, you know, what does that mean? What does it mean for me to have a God-given agency to reflect God in the earth and to move around in God-likeness? And I think there's a callback to what God had been doing the whole time God had been creating, which is creating and then basically saying, this is Naya's translation, you know, Naya's interpretation translation. God sits back and says, wow, that's good. And then starts creating something else, and then creates it, sits back and says, wow, that's good. Not surprised that God did something amazing, but with wonder. Wow, yes. This and naming the goodness that is inherent and primary in what was created.
Mm-hmm.
And so in
that, I like the NAV. I think I'll be using the NAV translation again.
But yeah, so God creates us and has this exciting idea that we would move through the earth with an agency to look at every good thing, name it as such. And Lisa Sharon Harper talks about this more in the Very, Very Good Gospel, and not just the thing in and of itself, but how that being is interconnected with everything else. Mm-hmm. So we get to verse 7. One day the eternal God scooped dirt out of the ground, sculpted it into the shape we call human, breathed the breath that gives life into the nostrils of the human, and the human became a living soul. What's interesting to me about this is that not just this creation story, but we are in the Bible, many creation stories that have been shared for thousands of years. If you listen to the creation story and then you pay attention to what scientists have found, who I would say that scientists have their own creation story, right? The Big Bang. Mm-hmm. That big things that science has found that people have been talking about for a very long time, that signals to me there are many different ways of knowing. Science is one way. There are other ways of knowing. And if we have the breath of the being that created all things in us, of course there would be things that we would have access to tap into and to know. And then we share it in our stories. And then, you know, later we use math and other things and say, actually, it's not that different. So in this story, God scoops dirt out of the ground, lovingly forms a human in God's hands. What we know is that the way that we get dirt on the earth and all of the elements that are in the dirt on the earth, you can trace them back to their original ancestor, which is a dying star. So mine, yours, the dirt, the trees, everything, the original ancestor is a dying star that went supernova, shot the elements that we see that build life and sustain life on this planet. They go through space, they land on Earth when the Earth is very young and still forming. And once those things settle and the conditions are right for life, life starts coming out of the Earth. And so this idea that we are earthly, that we are earthlings, that we are earth-like, is not far at all from what science has, the creation story that we also see science telling lines up with this. And that's really exciting to me because I start to think about God as scientist, God as astrophysicist, right? Taking the very building blocks of the universe and saying, I'm going to create an entire cosmos, and there's going to be this spot in the cosmos that I am going to build and breathe and imagine something into delight and wonder and liveliness. Not saying that God is not involved in other parts of the cosmos, but in this story, we're talking about God being involved in and through us. And I also want to say that as we talk about the way that we think about bodies, this text, I think, challenges the idea that the body is anything but holy, anything but wondrous, because we're talking about a body that is constructed from stardust, water, and Imago Dei. That's what our being is poured into. That's wondrous. Mm-hmm. What an imagination that our creator has to say, yeah, this is what I think I'm going to do. That's it. in our creation stories. And then thousands of years later says, and I'm also going to make sure that your scientists find out, because some of them need to know that I did it too, right? Like, to be able to marry all of the mythology. And when I say mythology, I don't mean a story that is not true. There's mm-hmm. different definitions of mythology. I'm talking about a mythology that is a story that helps us make meaning of our material experience, contextualized by our community and our culture. So science has mythologies as well. So I said a lot about that first verse. What? Please join me.
Yeah, I mean, the first, I was interested because you brought us back to the first one. And I know that I'm not a scholar in Hebrew. Most of my studies was in Greek. But I know that they'll talk about how even in the first creation story, like it's really poetry, right?
So
it's Hebrew poetry. So I just think even as we're thinking about the what it means, you know, the Imago Dei and wonder and our what it means to be human and all of that, just that even the very vehicle comes through one through poetry and the other through story, right? And how beautiful that is. And I think that like the form and the genre matter, right? For shaping imagination, because poetry does something to you, right? And story does something to you. And I think that it's a beautiful entry into then thinking about the significant. I mean, I love that you draw, you know, I mean, you're way more knowledgeable than I am as it relates to the cosmos and the intricacies of it and what it means to be, you know, stardust and of the earth, earthlings, right? I cannot wade in those waters quite as well as you can. But I think it's really beautiful to play, right, with these different mythologies and think about, right, how science can help us inform who we are, but also this deeper sense, again, of Imago Dei and the significance that each and every, all of our bodies, right, are holy and sacred and it's profound, right? And it is awe-striking to kind of conceptualize us here. Our very existence is kind of dependent on all of that. And that, I think it's really beautiful.
Well, and I think the reality is we, go ahead. The reality is we do have two origin stories, right? We have this origin story of God getting their hands dirty with the very dirt of the earth that is supporting all this other life, which I also think is important to note that humans in science and in this creation story are the newer of the beings. And so there's many that we can learn from. And so this origin story of where God puts their hands in dirt and gets dirty. And I love Reverend Dr. Wilda Gaffney does a really beautiful job. I don't remember if it's in Womanist Midrash or if it's in one of her lectionaries, where she really talks about this process, which some of what she said informs how I'm thinking about verse 8, which we'll get to. And remember the intentions that the Creator is holding in their minds of like, this is a being that gave me pause, that I like consulted around what this, and I want them to be godlike and have agency and have connection, and that it's that intention and love and expectation and excitement and delight that God forms a human, and the very stuff that God forms a human with is also origin story, that there is a star that was created billions of years before we were, that was allowed to be formed in these gaseous nebulous clouds, where the same gravity that has been holding on to us since the moment we got here and has not let us go is the same gravity that caused that star to form, kept that star going until that star died and sent everything that we, the things that we needed onto this new planet to live. And so we have an origin story, absolutely, of the stars and an origin story of the Earth. And I just have to say, as an aside, that that note about gravity is something that we don't think about. But I really appreciate Crystal Bennett Harris, who I learned much from, for giving that kind of affirmation around gravity holding us since the moment we got here, and it will not let us go.
That's profound.
And it is the same force that keeps the whole universe together. Scientists will tell you, if gravity operated in any different way, if it was any stronger, if it was any weaker, we're not here. So, Jared, you were going to say something before I keep going. Please say something now.
Well, I was just going to say, I think one of the things I love most about the Naya Abernathy version, the NAV as opposed to the NIV, is that it is so shot through with wonder that, I mean, sometimes the only thing that's worse than bad faith is bad faith plus bad science. And I get really nervous when, like, Christians who don't know about, like, scientific fields start playing in this kind of space, because when you add bad science to bad faith, there's nothing
fundamentalism.
You can't add anything positive to that, right? And it's amazing. And I love how you draw out, because one of the things that is baked into this deliciousness that you're serving up is new ways of knowing that aren't external, but are actually internal, that you're actually giving back to people what they already know and saying, hey, what if approaching life, faith, others, how you relate to yourself, actually started with what you're sensing and intuiting? And because of that, when you come to the sciences, you're not asking us to, you know, go read John Polkinghorne and make sure that our, like, introductory knowledge to quantum physics is at a stage where we don't look like an idiot on a university campus, as good as that is, right? As necessary as that is for some conversations, you're inviting us into stories that have baked into it these paradoxes that expand us. Like, I think about, scriptural verses that I'm sure for all three of us and many of the listeners as well, that the fear of God is the, can you finish it?
Beginning of
wisdom.
Right? So that freaks people out until you start messing with the Hebrew and realizing that fear of God is the same term that can also be translated the awe of God or the wonder of God. Or what it is to undergo that. And suddenly we're in a place where you can understand what that kind of understanding is inviting us into. That kind of wonder is everything you're actually setting out. And I think because of that, you're not asking us to go to the sciences in ways that, for many people, actually their experience of the sciences in school was actually quite painful and exclusive, because it was approached in ways that were estranged from our own bodies and our own knowing. But I love so much, Naya, like, what you're doing with this text and what you do through what you've offered in your book. Is inviting, it's the redemption of the sciences for some people as much as it is the redemption of faith, which I think is so beautiful. So maybe now I can work this into a question, because that was too much blabbing from me. I'm aware in how you told your story that there are elements of your story, and I find it easy to imagine little Naya because I know your wonderful children. And so I see them and I can picture little you. And because you're so easy to love and they're so easy to love, the idea of a little Naya like automatically warms me to you. And I think about you in your faith environments with these earnest questions, this what you described as a seriousness, but there is a hunger that is a part of Naya that this stuff matters and I'm going to actually like deal with it. And then finding spaces that while being warm aren't necessarily open.
Yeah.
And would it be too much to then read into your story, finding spaces that aren't warm, but are open to questions as long as you accept their external answers?
Yeah.
So it's not little Naya with her wonder in an environment that's warm, but like doesn't really have capacity to hold that with everything else that's going on, to finding other spaces where questions are welcome, but your wonderings, your own intuitions aren't welcome. And so much, I think, of what you're offering is on the other side, instead of losing all that, actually integrating that. Would you, and I mean, feel free to do it in reference to the next verse as well, or the verse that you've just opened up. But for those who are listening and go, I know that childlike, or I know that wonder in myself, and I also know certain faith environments where that wasn't, they didn't have capacity to hold that. And I know other environments which were all about the questions because they've got all the answers.
Right.
What are you offering that's different to both those in this beautiful book that you've produced at the moment? And could you speak to the three things that you ask us to be attentive to at the end of each reflection? Because I think that sums a lot of that up.
Yes. You just asked me a lot of things. So
I apologize.
I want to try and make sure I answer your question. One, I will read the Carl Jung quote that I referenced because I think it kind of beautifully gives a response to something, some of what you're talking about. He says, if our religion is based on salvation, our chief emotions will be fear and trembling. If our religion is based on wonder, our chief emotion will be gratitude. And some people will hear that and be like, what do you mean not salvation? Ah. But please hear that there's a different draw to Jesus when you are in awe of the way that he interacts. You
so good.
Want me to grasp and choke hold him for salvation. It's not the same. And I think as people who might, some people who might be like, what do you mean I need salvation? Here's what I will offer. I will always offer this when I talk about Imago Dei. And this will be a challenge for some. Some of you, you'll exhale and say, oh my God, can I actually believe this? And some of you will be like, I heard this before. That's fine. You're already good.
Yeah, it's correct.
You're already good. You were created good. That goodness doesn't move over because we get to Genesis 3. Like the goodness that you're created with, it's built into you like your DNA is. It's not going anywhere. It's of God. God affirms it. God desires for you to live from a place of knowing that you're held, knowing that you're beloved, knowing that you're whole, and knowing that you're good. You don't do anything for the goodness that you're designed with, that's already built in you. And I think so much of this conversation around salvation is about, I need to be saved into a goodness that I can't obtain by myself. When I actually would offer that Jesus is trying to point you back to the goodness that you've forgotten, that has been denied, that you've been told you don't have by toxic theologies and garbage doctrines. And again, if we start with wonder in the light in Genesis 2, where God pauses and said, ooh, I have an idea. We start our origin story there. If we start our origin story from the wonder that a star billions of years old would explode thousands of light years away and give life to us in its death, there's resurrection there. In the death of a star, there's life that is given and seeded in this earth. When we start there, then you're not grasping and choking Jesus for salvation, right? You go to Jesus with your need because you are in utter awe of who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different. And that's the space that when little Naya comes with her questions and her bebopping and she's excited about things and people are like, don't do that. No, we don't ask those questions. No, this is the answer. And she's like, oh, it is? Mm-hmm. And starts to tamp her intuition down, which has been intact since she was a child.
Yeah.
And then some other things start to come in because, yes, you're designed with goodness and you also have experiences that you have in your life. There are generational experiences that are handed mm-hmm. over to you in a lot of different ways. And life starts, you start also, that starts to process itself into your lived experience. Now Naya has different questions and feelings and no one's looking at her. And first, before they even answer the question, saying, oh, baby girl, first of all, you are so loved
mm-hmm.
and you're so good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell me more about what's going on. Like nobody starts the, when you don't start the sentence like that, then we forget.
Yeah.
So I think it's really key to anchor deeply, tether deeply to this goodness that God has created, built within us. Okay. You asked me something else. What I want to do is there's actually a entry in the book. I just have to find it that talks about. Oh, I know. You asked a question around
the format.
I don't remember your exact question, but I remember my answer. So can I just give you my answer? And then if you need to fill in, you can.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, there are one or two entries in the book that talk about this. One of the things I think is important to challenge is certainty, because just like we can grip on to Jesus for salvation because we're so afraid, we can grip onto certainty because we can't stand not knowing or the mystery or the curiosity or what the expansiveness of imagination actually ushers us into,
mm-hmm.
which is something that cannot be contained within the four brick walls of a church, which is something that goes beyond the text. Not saying the text is irrelevant, but it's not just the text. Jared, you said it before where you say, you will please say it the right way, because I don't think I'm going to say it the way that you usually say it. But you say something like, I don't believe, that's not how you say it, but basically you say, God is not the text, but I can find God in the text.
Mm-hmm.
And then what imagination and expansion says is, and you can also find God outside of the text.
Yeah, and now you're like,
and God's like, you know, and then it's something flings open to us and it's so massive and it's so big and it's so grand and we're so small that certainty helps us say, okay, but this is safe. Whatever we've been formed to desire around safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that certainty does not keep you safe.
Yeah, it's true. So good.
But it sure will help you be whole.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, Naya, of I don't know if you're familiar with James Weldon Johnson's The Creation. It's poetry. He wrote it in like 1927. And it's interesting because so you have this Black Harlem Renaissance like writer and leader who, as best as we understand, is probably atheist, right? But he wants to, I don't know, it's just as you're talking about all these things, like he sees so much value in turning to the creation stories, right? And he creates his own, and it's a mishmash of both Genesis 1 and 2, right? And it is both story and poetry, and God is very anthropomorphic. And it's his way of, at least my interpretation of the poetry is him seeing these kind of stories is so powerful for shaping in the midst of, you think about the pervasive anti-blackness in that moment that people are undergirding, right? And the way that Johnson describes God, like God is creative like black folk are in poetry, in vernacular, embodiment and practice. They can see themselves in God, right? And so there's this both cosmic thing happening. There's the humanity thing happening. There's wonder and awe. And it's not necessarily someone who even necessarily believes in God who even finds value in, and I guess the reason why that made me think about it is because the power of you, because I think you're inviting, this is really like, folks, whether you're coming from the cosmic side of things or you're drawn into these, you know, sacred stories, to be able to see the power of how they shape how we see ourselves and how we see others and how we see ourselves really bound up and tied to and interconnected with the whole universe, right? Anyway, I don't know why Johnson came to mind. Maybe both, because again, as I already said, I'm always amazed at folks who you can tell they crafted their sentences, right? It's not this, and you clearly do that. You do that work, crafting your words are intentional and thoughtful, and it's poetic, but it also opens people up to so much more. And I feel like, I don't know why that reminded me in a different way, but interconnected way of what Johnson was doing in 1927, right? Work on the creation. So anyway, if you haven't checked that out, check that out. I think you'll appreciate, it's very playful. So I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I've heard of him, but I haven't read that. So.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But I did want to ask if you would read a selection for us. You got to read us something. People want to get a taste, you know, what's going on. So I don't know if you have a favorite selection that you want to kind of draw from.
Yeah, there is. What I will do, I do have a selection that I will read. First, before I read the selection, I'm going to refer back to the eighth verse. Because we hung out at seven. And the eighth verse says, the eternal God planted a garden in the east in Eden, a place of utter delight, and placed the human whom God had sculpted there. To borrow a phrase from Jonathan Martin, I would, if somebody asked me to identify myself, I would call myself a Pentecostal mystic. And part of that mysticism is also someone who likes contemplation. And so I found myself in some contemplative Mennonite spaces, which have been really good for me in my formation at this point. And we've actually been spending a lot of time with Reverend Dr. Wilda Gaffney's lectionary, which has been really beautiful. And from one of these spaces, we're contemplating this idea of God placing a human in the garden. And so God creates this human out of dirt and then places a human in the garden and says, I'm going to show you how to tend to the dirt from which you were made. Because the dirt from which you were made doesn't just create you, it creates everything. And the tenderness of a God forming human in their hands with the intention and excitement of delight and wonder, and then saying, I'm going to place you here and I'm going to show you how to garden. I'm going to show you how to be in relationship with this earth, with these other beings that have been here before you. Again, to me, points to that God-likeness is not about domination. It is about relationship. It is about the interconnection. It is about the human putting their hands in soil and God saying, you know, if you do this, this, and this, you're going to get something that you can eat. And the human goes, wow, because wow was a marker of wonder. Wow, if I do that, if you do that with that, you're just going to get some flowers, but they're really nice to look at. Under the creator, the human apprentices under the creator. And the first task is to learn how to garden. So I feel like that's, you could probably talk for another 30 minutes about just that and the beauty of that.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm going to read an entry from my book. I'll read the offering and then the questions and affirmation noticing. Dandelions, especially when they turn into those feathery fluff balls, make me think about supernovas and our connection to them. Well, at least one of them. Eons ago, a particular massive star tried to fuse iron in its core. The celestial gardener, with whimsy and joy, saw this cosmic dandelion was ready. Eyes closed, with a pause. I wonder what the gardener wished for. What hope would the star seeds carry light years away in space and time? A deep inhale, then the celestial gardener blew breath out. The star went supernova, flinging the star seeds through space, carrying the hope and joy of the gardener to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Question, what are you wishing for these days? The affirmation, I am the result of star seeds landing on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Noticing, what are you noticing today about whimsy and joy? And if somebody wants that reference, that's on page 57.
That people can find on their own books once they go to Naya's website and purchase after listening or during listening. Press stop if you want. Press pause, right. go buy the book, come back.
That's right.
It's beautifully written, Naya. Like, the whole thing is gorgeous.
Thank you. Writing a book, I know neither of you have experienced this, but writing a book is so much like giving birth. There's all this gestation, there's this labor, there's delays. My son, he's my second child, and my water broke, and 12 hours later he was just still chilling, and I said, sir, you can't do that. The water is gone. Where are you? So writing a book and having it finally be kind of in material form and in your hands feels much like that. And so, my desire is that this labor is one that is not just of love, but it carries love and resourcing and self-compassion with it to the reader.
I think it does all those things. So thank you. I have not given birth to a child, but I have written books, and I can certainly resonate on that side of sharing. And I think that I'm excited about readers getting their hands on this book. We highly, highly, highly recommend it. and encourage all our listeners to go out and to get a copy of Naya's book. And yeah, get in touch with your own humanity, with the cosmos, begin to wonder. I do think, the awe, you know, I mean, certainly this is a podcast where we especially kind of turn ourselves to scripture. And I think even as Naya entered, there's a way in which you can approach the text in a mechanistic way where you can have awe, right? And have a different kind of encounter. And I think that's the same thing with the world, right? So we can kind of have a mechanistic kind of approach to the world. And there's just so much beauty to life and goodness to life that I think can be missed in the hustle and bustle of especially a highly, you know, late capitalistic society that is bent on productivity and efficiency and technologies and such that kind of turn us away from all the things that you turn us towards. And so thank you.
And if it's testimony time, Naya, I'm going to be first up to the mic and say, like, in my neurodiversity, this is amazing affirmation of my connection to, like, or as Samantha prayed before we press record, to that which is more than human, right? To the rest of creation. Yeah. It's such an important part of worship for me. It's such an important part of Jared being Jared. Like, I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, but literally as a child, I wouldn't go to bed unless my parents took me outside to say, night-night moon, night-night stars. That's how precious. So to have a text which brings the science in an imaginative way that actually affirms those ways of knowing, that for some of us, the wonder was beaten out of us in school so that we could quote unquote learn. And this is an invitation to heal that. To find faith not as an external thing that we need to get right, but rather as like an internal affirmation of a returning home. Ironically, Naya, I know you start with that quote from Carl Jung, but what your book helps a lot of people do, I think, and I think this will be the testimony of a lot of people, is that you'll help save salvation for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the English word is related to the word salve, like as in when you get a burn, and like it's related to healing. Somebody described to me last week as the Inverse podcast is about liberation hermeneutics. And I was like, sure, that'll work. That's not bad. Liberation, deliverance, they're just other ways of saying salvation. Like, that's we're right. very serious about salvation. Just not salvation as something that rescues us from our humanity.
Right.
That which returns us to our humanity. Yes. And wonder, awe, playfulness, the kingdom belongs to those who can giggle and no longer manipulate others, but instead play with one another. And thank you for that invitation. It does all that. And it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Thank you. And can I read? Let me see if I can I read one more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, here's our altar call.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yes, this is the altar call. Okay. If wonder and awe are twins, then curiosity is their sibling. When the interest that leads to inquiry grows up with wonder and awe, it's hard to get too far from a genuine childlikeness. As new beings on earth, children have a two-part job. One, follow what's interesting. Two, bask in its wonder. Many of us as adults become trained to find the right answer to our curiosity rather than being wowed by it. Mm-hmm. We value being right so much that we trade it in for our natural inclination toward amazement. Trade it back. Let imagination and open-heartedness give birth to curiosity, wonder, and awe. Like a child, they can show you the way.
So good.
That's so good. And Naya, let us know what page that one was on.
55. So right before the other one.
I only ask because, like, I'm going to use it in my sermon in a week's time. So thank you.
One more time, where can people find this book?
Yeah, you can go to my website, nayasabernathy.com, and my book is there under the wonder, in the menu under wonder and all.
Awesome. Thank you, Naya. This has been so good.
Thank y'all. It's really, really beautiful.
Praise the Lord, saints.
Praise the Lord.
It's my favorite Naya quote. Well, Naya, you know what I'm going to ask? For those who are going to stay on in person, but those who are listening online, would you pray our time out before we open it up for Q&A?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
Okay. We are going to do a bit of an embodied prayer. If you're in a place where you can settle into wherever your body is feeling grounded, if it's where your seat is, if it's where your feet are, and we're just going to drop our awareness into our groundedness, our tetheredness to the earth. Remembering that the same force of gravity that creates the universe is the same force that has tethered you to the earth from the moment you got here and will not let you go. Creator, you are faithful. You are faithful in ways we have yet to imagine. You are faithful to who you are, and who you are is beyond what we can understand and know. So you give us one another. You give us the stars. You give us the flowers, the water. You give us thunderstorms. You give us trees so that we could know you, so that we can remember that you delight in us always. And that delight and that love, that goodness, and that Imago Dei tethers us to you like gravity tethers us to the earth. May we always, always, always be in awe. May wonder be our companion. Whether we're journeying alone or with others. And may we remember that the God-likeness that you have been so excited to create us with is about naming the goodness of all of creation, including the goodness that resides in us. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ashe and amen.
The Inverse podcast is proudly supported by you, the listener. And if you want to join the revolutionaries who are helping us have conversations about how this ancient text can still turn the world upside down, why don't you head over to patreon.com/inverse.